Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. That debt is fraud. Please, please get active if you're inclined to be active in group prayer. Please start getting involved. Give us and or share your information. We'll be happy to attune people to your prayers. And fourth and finally, you're way behind the eight ball, folks. You need to get engaged in using petitions so that you create PR campaigns to challenge these commissioners in your county that need to be replaced. You're losing time, right? I mean, shoot, we've lost 4 or 5 months already. And so welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
Yay. Well, we've made some conclusions, folks, and there's still time to save it. That's one of the biggest conclusions. There's still time to save America. Even though we're seeing really bad things happening in D.C., and actually we can dive into this on my Friday topics, but for the most part, you've been warned. We need a constitutional president, not a globalist president. And so, all that being said, we can dive, like I said, we'll dive into this on Friday. What we decided to do, and Tammy made the decision, we're going to go into the notes as the next step. Right now, what we're doing is we're going through the process of what, you know, the Tory acts in getting Continental Congress formed and the Articles of Association, then the Articles of Confederation, and now we're going through the amendments to the Articles of Confederation. We've got one more to go through, and then we're going to dive into the committee or the convention in Annapolis of 1786, where they concluded that they needed to have a constitutional convention. And then the next document we'll go into is the report of that convention, of the Annapolis Convention from Congress, which is like February 1787, that's calling for all of the states to convene and send delegates into a convention. Then, at that point, we can go through how the states created the commissions for each of their delegates. This is all important because why? There's been history behind this, even way back then, that the delegates were basically charged with with allegations that they violated their commission, that they became a runaway convention. Now, the term runaway in the application being used, it literally abandoned their responsibilities. And folks, I want you to really get this in your head. Why is it that organizations are convincing us that that was a runaway convention when you really look at what they did, and the byproduct of that convention was integrating all of these things from the Constitution and these amendments? See, abandoning would mean that they would have basically empowered a king to rise up in America. That would have been abandoning the commission. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Or instituting communism or socialism, you know, going in a completely different direction would have been abandoning and a runaway. And so I'm here to defend the honor and the reputation of the men that actually went into this convention. So we're going to dive into that when we go through Madison's notes. One of the reasons I don't spend too much time on the Federalist Papers is just because they're just opinions. Anyway, let's dive into this amendment, if you wouldn't mind. And as a matter of fact, let me take a look at this, because this is a little long. We've got a total of four pages. And so what they're really doing here is they're trying to amendments to the Articles of Confederation proposed by the Grand Committee of Congress. So in other words, Congress kind of went through this and they said, here's all of our problems. And so suffice it to me, and maybe suffice it to Tammy, that we can actually just kind of look and examine this instead of reading this. Because, folks, I want you to read this. I want you to know what it says. And they actually kind of go through this grand committee consists of Mr. Livermore, Mr. Dane, Mr. Manning, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Smith. Oh, Mr. Smith was there. I just say that because, you know, who's Mr. Smith? I mean, that's a very common name even back then. Anyway, Mr. Symes, Mr. Petit, Mr. Henry, Mr. Lee, Mr. Bloodworth, Mr. Pinckney, and Mr. Houston. Now, some of these names you're actually going to find in the ratification debates, and I think some of these names you'll even find at the Constitutional Convention. One name that you will find involved in both the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution, and the ratification debates is Roger Sherman, the only one man that actually had his hand in all four of the documents and the makings thereof. Okay. So do you concede that maybe it'd be just better to look at what they're doing regarding the articles and so forth? So first off, they're adding an article. They wanted to create Article 14. And this is where they would have the exclusive power of regulating trade and basically stop these states, the bigger states, from, you know, hijacking this whole trade situation amongst all of the states. Article 15, adding another one, and basically inducing to perform the several duties where they'll actually be able to, I think it looks like, what is this, taxation? Yeah, or actually, no, they're talking, if you look down, she may be required to pay or furnish the same, which additional sum or charge shall be at a rate of 10%. In other words, kind of being able to institute punishments on the states and levying, you know, these bad behaviors, if they're not paying their debt or whatever, that they can punish them. Right? Okay, so yeah. Article 16. Let me see here. Requisition towns. Oh, okay. So this is where it looks to me like they wanted to be able to create assessments on the property and the improved properties of the states for taxation purposes. Now, does this have any? Does this sound like something, or does this look like the Continental Congress was trying to impose a certain type of tax?
Yeah, definitely property tax.
Property tax. There you go. And in other words, this is how the states with better improvements and the states that are growing faster would actually pay a greater tax. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, the more, it's like today when you look at how property tax is assessed, who pay out, you know, out of a neighborhood, who would pay the greatest tax? Whoever has the nicest house.
Right.
Right. So one would think that maybe it might be a good thing not to improve your house and its appearance on the outside.
Yeah. Definitely no incentive to improve your home, that's for sure.
Unless you're married and you're the person you're married to is of the finer sex, that she wants to have a nice appeal to the house, a curb appeal, and then, folks, you're just, it's over. Anyway, okay, so Article 17, they wanted to add this, and payments on requisitions in advance on average of payments, or said advance. So I guess they wanted to make an ability for them to start paying advances. Interesting. And the Article 18, in case it shall hereafter be found necessary by Congress to establish a new systems of revenue, a new way of regulations in finances of the U.S. for a limited term of not to exceed 15 years. So in other words, they would be able to come up with a new way of taxing. Do you see Do you see the Continental Congress and what they're trying to do as and these types of amendments that they were looking to do was underhanded, maybe, or nefarious? Because if you give them the ability to add to create new taxes, that really opens the door. Okay, Article 19. Congress assembled shall have the sole and exclusive power of declaring what offenses against the United States shall be deemed treason and what offenses against the same misprison of treason, blah, blah, blah. So, in other words, it looks like they're really trying to get more control over one, treason, and the construction of treaties. So it looks like maybe they're getting ready to actually start going after individuals in the states we're not abiding by the Confederate, you know, Articles of Confederation. They call it a constitution. So by this current constitution, they want to be able to charge you with treason and come after you. So, okay, due to the attention of Article 20, due to the attention of may be given to the affairs of the Union early in the federal year and of the session of Congress, made shortly, conveniently, by the state delegates annually, I think, what is this? Those who may decline before the first year of October, I guess this is the filling of delegates that are being elected or chosen, because I think by this point in time, the reason this article comes up, I believe, and we're going to find out in the ratification debates as well as maybe the notes, that there were states that were not filling their delegations. In other words, they're now making it, they want to make it so that, hey, you got to do this, and we don't care what your problems are. You need to staff Congress because it was a problem. So, okay, so they wanted to add 7 new articles to the Articles of Confederation. Okay, there we go. That in a... Yes. In less than 10 minutes, we kind of summarized those articles. Now, what we want to do is we want to cover the proceedings of commissioners to remedy the defects of the federal government. Now, what I just read, that amendment going out and adding those 7 articles, that was August 1786. This is a convention that was going on probably at the same time, because I just, things don't happen this close together where, you know, you got one bit of delegations in Congress. I believe that the people that were there in Congress were not at this convention in Annapolis.
Right. Therefore,
I believe that the people that we find here, because it actually has the list of names. We find Alexander Hamilton and Egbert Benson for New York. And then Abraham Clark, William Houston, and James Sherman. Trench Cox. We've got George Reed, John Dickinson, Richard Bassett. Edmund Randolph, who I believe was governor. James Madison, St. George Tucker, and Mr. Dickinson. And that was it. So in other words, we had, what, 5 of the 13 states at this convention. And so let's dive into this, because this is where they really
were. Why only 5?
Well, that was the problem. I mean, the question was, and as we see, this is how many years? This is only 3 years. And a half, 3.5 years. I'll give it the extra 6 months, right? So 3.5 years after the ratification of the Articles of Confederation, they were so frustrated in trying to get things done because they couldn't, because the states were running around undermining this entity that they created and didn't empower them. They didn't delegate and empower. Leaders delegate and empower. And so the states were not leaders. They were managers, ensuring that they were protecting their own little cabal. You're going to hear me say this, that these big states were cabals. Patrick Henry and those powers that be within Virginia were players of the cabal. Now, Edmund Randolph was an outlier. He was the governor of Virginia, and he actually went to the Constitutional Convention and came back and attended the ratification debates. Now, at the convention, he refused to sign it. And then at the ratification debates, he was a proponent for it. And he had a lot of explaining to do why he was against it, but promoting it. You know what I mean? And as we kind of look at this, we will find that this is, I think, when Hamilton and Madison started synchronizing in the need of the change of government. Okay, and so let's go ahead and read right underneath where it lists the names. The commissioners produce the credentials. So, you know, if you've been to a convention, right, they do the credentials and all of that, yeah. Right? Okay, so they go through that, and after full communication sentiments, right, so they met agreeably. So let's actually dive into where we really get into the discussion, which is the 14th of
Okay.
Of September. Thank you.
So, met agreeable to adjournment, the meeting resumed consideration of the draft of the report, and after some time spent therein, and amendments made, the same was unanimously agreed to, and is as follows, to wit. To the Honorable, the Legislatures of Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York, commissioners from the said states respectively assembled at Annapolis, humbly beg to leave report. That pursuant to their several appointments, they met at Annapolis in the state of Maryland on the 11th day of September, instant, and having proceeded to a communication of their powers, they found that the Senate of New York, Pennsylvania, and Virginia had in substance and nearly in the same terms authorized their respective commissioners to meet such commissioners as were or might be appointed by the other states in the Union at such time and place that should be agreed upon by the said commissioners to take into consideration the trade and commerce of the United States, to consider how far an uniform system in their commercial intercourse and regulations might be necessary to their common interest and permanent harmony, and to report to the several states such an act relative to this object, to this great object, as when unanimously ratified by them, would enable the United States and Congress assembled effectively to provide for the same.
Okay, hold on here. Now, you read it, but what day was this that they actually met and had this conversation that generated this report? Because this is the report.
September 14th, 1786.
No.
Oh.
In here, you actually said that they actually read, or they met, and this they discussed this on a very specific day. It's in the second line.
The 11th day.
This, I think, in American history, is the first day, the first usage of the 11th of September, significant to our Constitutional Republic. Right? I mean, so what was significant? Why was it that Osama bin Laden Obama decided to attack us on the 11th? I should know that, but it's kind of like when we look at the 20th of April, you know, there have been days that have honored and recognized Hitler and his birth, for these, you know, huge mass murders like Columbine and so forth. And as a matter of fact, I think security around the United States and or anywhere in the world where, you know, radicals that want to, you know, inflict, you know, fear, the 20th of April, because that's Hitler's birthday. So what was significant? But I clearly see here that in this formal discussion in Annapolis, the delegates of these four states or five states that met said, we need to convene a convention, because that was the outcome of this report. Just throwing it out there, because if obviously that was on the 11th. The divine hand of providence was, you know, moving this nation in a direction. Okay. So let's go ahead and pick it up with the state of Delaware and on. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. That the state of Delaware had given similar powers to their commissioners, with this difference only, that the act to be framed in virtue of those powers is required to be reported to the United States in Congress assembled, to be agreed to by them and confirmed by the legislatures of every state.
Okay. So keep going.
Scroll down. State. But the state of New Jersey had enlarged the object of their appointment, empowering their commissioners to consider how far an uniform system in their commercial regulations and other important matters might be necessary to the common interest and permanent harmony of the several states, and to report such an act on the subject as when ratified by them would enable the United States in Congress assembled effectually to provide for the
exigencies of the Union. Yeah, okay. Okay.
The Union. The appointments of commissioners have also been made by the states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and North Carolina, none of whom, however, have attended. But that no information has been received by your commissioners of any appointment having been made by the states of Connecticut, Maryland, South Carolina, or Georgia. At the express terms of the powers to your commissioners, supposing a deputation from all states and having for object the trade and commerce of the United States, your commissioners did not conceive it advisable to proceed on the business of their mission under the circumstance of so partial and defective a representation.
Okay. Keep going.
Deeply impressed, however, with the magnitude and importance of the object confided to them in this occasion, your commissioners cannot forbear to indulge in an expression of their earnest and unanimous wish that speedy measures may be taken to effect a general meeting of the states in a future convention for the same and such other purposes as the situation of public affairs may be found to require.
Okay. So right here is where they say we need to have a convention. Now, when you look up from where you started, the state of Delaware had given similar powers. In other words, they basically, and it has the quote there, to the United States in Congress assembled to be agreed by them and confirmed by the legislatures of every state. And then the state of New Jersey went a little bit further and says, would enable the United States in Congress assembled effectually to provide for the exigencies, there's that word, of the Union. In other words, the urgencies of the Union to basically preserve the Union. That was New Jersey's position. And then the other states that didn't even show up. But bottom line, as they get down to this point, now they're deeply impressed and they're really moving forward. Now, interestingly enough, Madison's from Virginia, Hamilton's from New York. The two states that really expressed was Delaware and New Jersey. Right? So they didn't even list those states. But now they're basically saying that we need to have a convention for the same purposes as the situation of public affairs may be found to require. Okay, so let's keep going here.
Okay. If in expressing this wish or in intimating any other sentiment, your commissioner should seem to exceed the strict bounds of their appointment, they entertain a full confidence that a conduct dictated by an anxiety for the welfare of the United States will not fail to receive an indulgent construction.
Okay, so go ahead and then just skip down to the next paragraph.
Okay. That there are important defects in the system of the federal government is acknowledged by the acts of all those states which have concurred in the present meeting. That the defects upon closer examination.
My apologies, folks. We have just ran into, so we're going to pick up this paragraph right after we come back from break. But unfortunately, I wasn't watching the clock because I was really engaged in this. I hope you're equally engaged because this is setting up the Constitutional Convention. And we want to prove something that these guys didn't violate the commission. We'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so forgive me. I did not see that we were going right into break when you started reading. So my apologies to you, Tammy. Do you forgive me? And mute might be one of those things. So, all right. You forgive me?
Yeah, there we go. I do.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much. Now, without any further ado, Tammy will read to you the next paragraph.
All right. That there are important defects in the system of the federal government is acknowledged by the acts of all those states which have concurred in the present meeting. That the defects upon a closer examination may be found greater and more numerous than even these acts imply is at least so far probable from the embarrassments which characterize the present state of our national affairs, foreign and domestic, as may reasonably be supposed to merit a deliberate and candid discussion in some mode which will unite the sentiments of councils of the states. In the choice of the mode, your commissioners are of opinion that the convention of deputies from the different states for the special and sole purpose of entering into this investigation and digesting a plan for supplying such defects as may be discovered to exist will be entitled to a preference from considerations which will occur without being particularized.
Okay, particularized. They don't want to necessarily be too constrained, right? Don't tie their hands. All right, so keep going. Your commissioners
decline an enumeration of those national circumstances on which their opinion respecting the propriety of future convention with more enlarged powers is founded, as it would be an useless intrusion of facts and observations, most of which have been frequently the subject of public discussion, and none of which can have escaped the penetration of those to whom they would in this instance be addressed. They are, however, of a nature so serious as in the view of your commissioners to render the situation of the United States delicate and critical, calling for an exertion of the united virtue and wisdom of all the members of the Confederacy.
Okay, last one here.
Under this impression, your commissioners, with the most respectful deference, beg to leave to suggest their unanimous conviction that it may essentially tend to advance the interests of the Union, if the states by whom they have been respectively delegated would themselves concur and use their endeavors to procure the concurrence of the other states in the appointment of commissioners to meet at Philadelphia on the second Monday in May next to take into consideration the situation of the United States, to devise such further provisions as shall appear to them necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the
exigencies.
Yes, of the Union, and to report such an act for that purpose to the United States in Congress assembled, as when agreed to by them and afterwards confirmed by the legislature of every state, will effectually provide for the same.
Okay, so you missed, folks, the highlighting the boldness and the underlining of this. what I have to point out is that last part of that, that after the second Monday in May next, to take into consideration the situation of the United States, to devise such further provisions as shall appear to them necessary. In other words, these delegates, as it appears to them, to do what is necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies of the union, to be able to be able to preserve this union. Does it seem like they're asking for a very limited scope in this convention?
Not really, no.
They're asking the states for a blank check.
Yeah.
Really? Do whatever these delegates find necessary to basically render, you know, a effectual constitution that would meet the exigencies of the union. Okay, so how is it that one would take this call from this convention to say, no, no, we want to just, you know, hem-haw and bounce around some ideas that the states could look at maybe a couple of amendments to the Articles of Confederation. Now, we already know going in that an amendment would require unanimity. In other words, Rhode Island would have to pipe in and say, we allow it. They already knew that that was not going to fly. They knew that Rhode Island, actually, we're going to find documents where they refer to Rhode Island as Rogue, R-O-U-G-E, Rogue Island. That was how they referred to them. So they already knew that they were hamstrung. Why would they want to waste any more time in a convention when the outcome coming from that would literally require Rogue Island to kill everything that they've done? All the time and money completely wasted because this one state is becoming the problem. It's almost like Rogue Island had been penetrated by Britain and they were being paid off to actually frustrate the Union. Now, that's just me putting it out there, because if there was anybody or if there was anything that was fully proving that they needed to make some significant changes, and the ratification process was one of those to make sure that they did that. And so these men basically then signed this document and sent it off to Continental Congress, okay? Mm-hmm. Now it sat, and as a matter of fact, I don't even know if Continental Congress was in session at the time. I have no idea. Actually, I do know that Continental Congress passed the Northwest Ordinance in October of 1787. So when they were meeting in September, this going off in, you know, mid-September, 86, I guess Continental Congress did meet, but they probably broke for the winter. And then when they came back, because the report, the next document we're going to read is the report, right? And so this is the report mm-hmm. of the proceedings in Congress. And the date of this was the February 21st, 1787, assembled as before. And so when we look at the names again, we see Mr. Dane, Mr. Vernon, Mr. S.M. Mitchell, Mr. Smith again, Mr. Caldwell or Cadwaller. Who knows? That could be a completely different Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith goes to Congress, right? Goes to Washington. Isn't that a movie?
It sounds like one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So Mr. Irwin, Mr. Mitchell, Mr. Forrest, Mr. Grayson. So Mr. Grayson is in the Virginia ratification debate, so he's there. Mr. Blount, Mr. Bull, Mr. Few, F-E-W, Few, to whom was referred a letter of 14 September 1786 from J. Dickinson, written at the request of the commissioners, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just laying here's the men that actually heard this. This is all that was in Continental Congress. Now, I'm going to just venture to say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 men representing 13 sovereign and different states was what was in Continental Congress at the time. As they looked around and they saw that they didn't really even have quorum, because they didn't have adequate representation from all of the states. I believe they needed a few people from each of the states. I forget what it was, but you should have been seeing probably a body of 20 to 30 men instead of 11 yeah. or 12. Anyway, all right, so now they're going to read this letter and some of the stuff that we've already read. But let's go ahead and go through this, because then they have a motion at the end. So let's just read the two highlighted paragraphs. Okay?
Wait, where are we at?
We're right below that. There's two highlighted paragraphs.
Oh, I don't see
them. Are you in the report of the proceedings? The document?
Oh, okay. Okay. I am now.
All right. Ah. Now you see the two paragraphs, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go read those.
Okay, so Congress, having had under consideration the letter of John Dickinson, Esquire, Chairman of the Commissioners, who assembled at Annapolis during the last year, also the proceedings of the said commissioners and entirely coinciding with them as to the inefficiency of the federal government and the necessity of devising such further provisions as shall render the same adequate to the exigencies of the Union, do strongly recommend to the different legislators to send forward delegates to meet the proposed convention on the second Monday in May next at the city of Philadelphia.
Exigencies.
I don't know why I have trouble with that word.
It's okay. It almost reads the way it looks, almost, right?
Exigencies. Yeah, it does, actually.
Okay, all right. Okay, so then they read, they quote another thing that came from this convention in Annapolis. Go ahead.
That it be recommended to the states composing the Union that a convention of representatives from the said states respectively be held for the purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union between the United States of America and reporting to the United States and Congress assembled to the states respectively, such alterations and amendments of the said Articles of Confederation as the representatives met in such convention shall judge proper and necessary to render them adequate to the preservation and support of the Union.
Okay, so they're asking the states to send delegates, like they kind of did before, on that second Monday of May, that these people in this convention shall judge proper and necessary to render them this new change, this alterations and amendments, right? So they're making all, mm-hmm. It says alterations and amendments. Is that something fixed, or as you look down here, shall judge proper and necessary to render them adequate to the preservation of the Union? Remember, up here it says, shall render the same adequate to the exigencies of the Union. They understood uh-huh. that they literally, in the convention, they really understood that they had to get away from the unanimous ratification of amendments and the unanimous ratification of the Constitution. That the Union, if there were states that wanted to have unanimity, like Rhode Island, then they can, be on their own. That these states had to understand the importance of centralizing the powers necessary to actually make the government effectual. I've talked on the side, on my Mondays and Friday shows. I have told you folks that when you create a government, that government must be self-sufficient. In other words, when you look at the county, and you look at the size of the county and how many people are in that county, you need to make sure that you have a tax base capable of supporting that county government that you need to create, right? And so mm-hmm. I've actually gone through this, and I've actually gone through, all of the different counties by population and so forth. And actually, what I've done a long, long time ago, I did this. I went through, and I can tell you that there are Texas, Hawaii, Nebraska, Montana, New Mexico, Alaska, North Dakota, Colorado. I'm just trying to, you know, Idaho, where there's only less than 1,000 people. Actually, let me see if there's any others. Utah. So we have quite a few states I've just listed that have less than 1,000 citizens in a county. Are you going to tell me that 1,000 citizens can afford a sheriff, can afford a judge, can afford commissioners, can afford cop cars, and those types of things? Is that even possible in a tax base? I mean, are they going to is everybody working full-time as slaves to their government? Does that make sense? A government must be self-sufficient, so you need an adequate tax base for that government to actually sustain itself, not comfortably. You want to make it so that the people live comfortably, not the government. And so you want to make sure that you have, and I would venture to say, about 30,000. I think that's a very fair number for a county, or a standard for a county, so that the county can have a militia, so that the county can have a sheriff, so that the county can have an executive and county commissioners, legislative and a judge. You know, you have your three branches of government, and you're going to have a clerk. You're going to have, if you're going to have property tax, you'll need an assessor. Why have property tax? Why have property tax when you can actually make your revenue another way? Because property tax punishes those people who have more money. Because the more expensive your property is, the more you're going to pay in tax. And so anybody that actually has money, you don't want to create a system that actually punishes people for taking their money and investing it. Because what happens, let's say you have all these homes in a community that are assessed by the assessor on property tax at $90,000 a home. And they have, each of these homes have, you know, 5 acres of land. And, you know, so the property and improved, you know, dwellings and everything else, $90,000 on all these homes, all of them. It's pretty much average homes. And then a couple of people come in and they buy up 5 acres here, 5 acres there in the same community. They may even buy up a $90,000 value, you know, pay somebody and buy up their house and then completely revamp, I mean, tear down the home and build a mansion and pay a couple million dollars in the, you know, the building and the improvement of the property, a couple million dollars easily. And so you now have 3 or 4 properties in the community that have, you know, assessed values of a few million dollars. What does that do to those neighbors that were at 90,000? What does it do to their homes?
It increases their property value.
Oh, why does it do that?
Because it's going off of the property, the million-dollar property
value. And that is one of the insidious things about property tax, is that when you look at the value of the home, the value of the home is only established when a buyer comes along and gives you a price that they perceive is fair. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In other words, you can't sell that. If you got a $90,000 home and, you know, all the homes are basically rated at $90,000, you're trying to sell your home at $90,000. And because you haven't done any improvements to it, like painting or anything, and I mean, you know, you have the crappiest lot out of all of the hundreds of homes that are $90,000, do you really think that somebody's going to pay you $90,000 for that home? No. So it's real value is only the value that somebody is willing to take out of their pocket to give you. Now, let's just say you didn't make all of these real big improvements, but let's say you put, you know, a 30,000, you know, standby generator on your home. Let's say you go inside the house and put granite floors and all of these, you know, really nice upgrade amenities to the inside of your home with, you know, more closet space or whatever, right? And so when you drive by, you don't even see an increased value in that home. And when you go by and when people look at all of the homes for $90,000, they walk into your home and they see that little generator sitting there and they see these new appliances and all these amenities and so forth. And are you going to tell me you're going to try to sell that home for $90,000?
No.
No, no. As a matter of fact, you're going to actually list at a high level and you're going to actually realize that you were too cheap when that person doesn't even balk at the price you put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So in other words, your perceived value was far less than what that other person that was willing to reach into their pocket to buy that. The true value of property is the precise value that somebody is willing, in a competition, whoever's willing to pay the most for it. That's what the perceived value is. Now, any other way is all playing games and basically running up the averages so that they can soak more people for more money. There's got to be a better way of taxing than ever taxing property. I do like...
Plus, even if you haven't improved your property, they assume you have and increase your property taxes.
Yes, but I do like voluntary property tax. Okay, so in other words, if you're a property owner, you can... And so I like poll taxes. I like, you know, making it so only property owners can actually vote. And I don't... But I don't believe that property owners should be the only ones voting for representatives. I think every person has a, you know, should have access and a right to have a representative in a Republican form of government. But if it is going to be taxation assessments or those types of things to be added to your home, I believe the only people that should be able to vote in that election are the actual property owners within that county.
Well, that would make sense because the assessor has to own property in the city to be an assessor.
Is it required?
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't know that. I thought that because so that's in your state constitution that the qualifications for an assessor is they have to be a property owner themselves.
Yep.
You can't live in an apartment.
Nope, they have to own.
Okay, because I don't think that's the way in many of the other states. I don't think it's that way in Washington. And probably that same thing in New York, because it allows these non-property owners to actually weaponize the assessor's office. But
and they also have to be living there.
So that's all that I think is standard, that in all government offices, you have to reside within the county. And as a matter of fact, I think they even do that with police and fire to incentivize people to, you know, to have their employees, their policemen living in the communities where they work. And, you know, so there's some bad
idea.
And there's some bad communities where even policemen don't want to live. But I know that they do offer incentives so that they do live in those neighborhoods. And by doing so, it actually improves. So let me just go back to, because I've said this before, that if we were enforcing the law by the militia, that means that everybody would have to do it. There wouldn't be a neighborhood that would be central to crime, because everybody in that neighborhood would be law enforcers. If we're all, if the militia means all of us, have to enforce the law. Right?
Yeah.
And those people who would violate the law as the militia, it's almost like, what do you do to a person when you've given them a trust in the community because you're a law enforcer and you violate the law yourself, the punishment should be stiffer. Mm-hmm. In other words, we're way too light on our punishment, and we don't actually demand everybody to enforce the law. So these types of paradigm shifts, because that's exactly the type of government these men were creating, a citizenry government where everybody was involved. Now, granted, they didn't have, you know, what I'd call the big company slavery system that we have, where everybody becomes employees. But when we really look at it, you know, you don't have to. You can become your own boss. You can, if you're skilled or what have you, you can be a private contractor, or you can become an employee. And it seems like we've gravitated towards more employees because businesses get bought up, centralized, and so forth. And the reason all of this has been happening is because the federal government allows an assimilation where corporations can function without they've been indemnified by the federal government that they can't be regulated differently from one state to the next. When they, like Walmart, well, the way Walmart operates, they have this indemnity that they can get away with doing things because the federal government protects them. Where folks, newsflash, the federal government does not have the authority to protect corporations. The reason we're having all of these problems is because the federal government is doing things that they're not supposed to be doing. And now we're reading how Trump is going to be putting, you know, literally this massive digital control in America, just like what they're doing in China. Who's your friend now? We'll talk about it this coming Friday as I wrap up the education and the comparison between Doge and Republic Review. Folks, if there's ever an argument for, you know, taking action on anything, the only action that will actually save America is Republic Review. It is interposition, following Madison and Jefferson's guide as what we have to do, because we need the states to step. We need the states to step in. We need the counties to step into the states. States to step into the federal. We need interposition. So. And I'm looking at this, by the way,
failed when it got to the Senate side here in Wyoming.
Right. And that's unfortunate.
Didn't
even make it into a committee. So we need to have that resolved again with a better results in the House. And hopefully we'll actually start communicating that. But I think that the problem is that you have lobbyists that have a good hold on your legislators, i.e. the convention of state folks, these lobbyists that have got a stranglehold on legislators when that shouldn't even be happening. Right. So anyway, we're running out of time.
It passed in the House, and it failed once it got to the Senate side. So.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
They just didn't see it as very important.
Now that I have the time to say it, thank you so much for joining us. And so, folks, I was able to gracefully go out there. How about that, huh? It can happen once a year. Anyway, we're going to dive into these elections and the delegations of power in our next episode, and we'll be moving on from there. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.